Earlier this week, Friends of the Earth International released a new report about how U.S. agencies, funders such as the Gates Foundation, and agribusiness giant Monsanto are trying to force unwilling African nations to accept expensive and insufficiently tested genetically modified foods and crops. The report is entitled, Who Benefits from GM Crops? The Expansion of Agribusiness Interests in Africa Through Biosafety Policy. And joining me to speak about this report is its co-author, Heidi Swanby, from the African Center for Biodiversity in Cape Town, South Africa. Hello, Heidi.
Hi there.
How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you so much
for having me.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. So just before we get started talking about maybe the details of the report, can you tell us what genetically modified foods and crops are and why they are a danger to agriculture and to human consumption?
Well, in a nutshell, GM crops are produced differently to normal seeds, in that they have genetic material from foreign organisms, things that they're not related to. So, for example, the most common one is a plant that produces its own pesticide, and the toxin, the pesticide toxin, comes from a soil organism, which is toxic to certain pests. So it's something that we've never had in nature before, it's something that can't happen naturally. Our bodies are not used to digesting this kind of scrambled up DNA. And it's such a new technology that we really don't know how it's going to play out in the long term.
And obviously, genetically modified crops and foods are a big business for agribusiness organization, multinationals such as Monsanto. So even though they may not be beneficial, or we don't know the potential dangers that they hold, they are a big cash grab, right? They make a lot of money. And I'm assuming that this is the reason that agribusiness giants such as Monsanto are pushing this on the African market. So can you explain to us how, as you said in the report, Monsanto and even organizations like the Gates Foundation and also it has said that other U.S. agencies, how are they pushing this onto the African market? And from what I understand, it's through, influencing biosafety legislations on the African continent. So can you tell us about this process and especially about the weakness of bio and the newness of biosafety regulations on the African continent?
Negotiations around biosafety policy began in the 90s already, where the United States position on GMOs was that they're completely safe, they're nothing novel, they're nothing new, they don't need any special regulations, it's just like what we've had before. Many other countries and many scientists around the world felt that this technology was extremely novel and should be regulated. And it was a long process of negotiating an international protocol around how GMOs should be used. And African leaders were kind of at the forefront of negotiating that protocol. They were saying, this technology is going to be imposed on us. Africans are not going to be developing it. We worry because we live in very biodiverse areas, some of the most biodiverse areas in the world. So our ecosystems are very complex. Because we live in tropical areas, we have a lot of different diseases, so risk assessment is going to be difficult. So African leaders during those negotiations are the ones that are really pushing for caution and resistance and saying this doesn't suit our agricultural systems. It's made for large-scale systems. We all farm on a very small scale. So they put up a lot of resistance. And eventually a protocol was developed called the International Biosafety Protocol, and all of the African nations have signed up to that protocol, practically all of them. The United States is not a member to the protocol. They don't agree with it at all, and they're not a member of the Mother Protocol, so the Convention on Biodiversity. so they can't be party to this international biosafety protocol. But kind of the double-edged sword is that once African nations had signed up to this protocol, they had to implement them in their domestic legislation. And this is extremely expensive. You need very specialized legal expertise, scientific expertise. You need special laboratories and greenhouses. So it's a huge exercise. And this is where the United States Agency for AIDS really came in and told African nations what will help you develop your biosafety legislation, and started giving a lot of assistance, technical assistance, legal, scientific. But what we saw is that the kind of legal assistance they're giving and the type of legal frameworks they're creating are actually opening the door for GMOs. They're kind of permitting systems instead of being regulating systems to make sure that they're safe and they're safe properly. So it's been quite a double-edged sword. At the moment, only about 7 countries in Africa have got proper functioning biosafety systems, and only 4 countries have allowed the commercial cultivation of GM crops.
And those would be South Africa, Egypt, Burkina Faso, and Sudan, yeah?
That's right.
So what you're saying is, like, agencies such as the Gates Foundation were like, hey, we're willing to help you out in drawing up these legislations, but what they're doing in that is opening up the door to GM products. Is that right?
That's right. And I mean, the line is very much Africa is starving, African agriculture is backwards. It needs to be modernized. You need this technology mm-hmm. as soon as humanly possible, and don't put obstacles in the way with safety assessments.
So I did want to talk about that in a bit, but in terms of what this is displaying, right? So there seems to be a partnership, it might be silent, between multinational corporations that are trying to push GMOs because they make money off of them, and the international development industry. So can you talk about what seems to be that partnership, and which, I mean, shouldn't be?
There's quite a lot of development projects where development agencies and multinational companies are teaming up together. And a really strong example is called the Water Efficient Maize for Africa program, which is developing drought-tolerant maize. And it's a kind of a welfare program. So it's done in partnership with African governments, with USAID, and Bill Gates Foundation. And then Monsanto is donating their germplasm, their drought-free germplasm, and their technology and their technical advice. So they're all working together to introduce drought-free maize. And in that process, they're gaining access to African scientists, training a lot of African scientists in American-style regulations, intellectual property rights, teaching them how to negotiate intellectual property rights, get the materials, and doing a lot of influence on biosafety policy. So, for example, in Tanzania and Mozambique, those two governments have very strict laws around liability. So in terms of the law, if anything goes wrong with the GM crops, the producers, which will be WEMA, Gates Foundation, Monsanto, they will be responsible for any damages caused. And now this WEMA project has told those two governments that they won't run any field trials in their country, they won't continue any more experimentation, they won't introduce this program unless they amend those strict liability laws and make sure that the multinationals are not responsible for damages that arise.
And I'm sure you know here in Canada, in the development industry here, it's becoming more and more of a common practice of CETA teaming. So CETA is our kind of version of USAID, USAID, uh-huh. Is teaming up more and more with mining multinationals on the continent, so that if you want to do development projects on the continent, you'll be forced to work with mining companies that, of course, are just on the continent for their own self-interest and to make money.
I didn't know that. That's quite mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous how the development industry and the resource extraction industry is, they're kind of going in the same direction and more teaming up. And we see this now with Bill Gates Foundation, with USAID, teaming up in a sense with Monsanto. So we can see that kind of across the development spectrum. But I also wanted to go back to what you were saying before. There's this, the way that this is being pushed onto the African market is that there's this perception that GM crops and foods will provide food security for a continent that, is claimed to be food short or is claimed to be food insecure. But food insecurity is not a matter of science necessarily, but of course is a political and historical matter, right? The continent used to be able to feed itself, for example. So can you tell us a bit about this context in which, and this historical and political context in which we're seeing the pushing of GM foods on the continent?
Well, I think it's important to understand that African agriculture is completely different to kind of American agriculture or industrial agriculture. And still 80% of farmers in Africa are using traditional seeds and exchange seeds. They don't buy a seed from the formal market. They don't buy chemicals. They can't afford to. A vast majority of people are living on less than $2 a day. So they're also farming on absolute maximum of 5 hectares. And a lot of the people who are farming are women who don't have access to finance. They often don't have secure land tenure. They don't have access to markets. So that's what African farming looks like. And it's also deeply embedded in the culture. So, if there's a wedding, you might bring from the other village, you're required to bring seeds. There are a lot of spiritual aspects to exchange of seed and blessing of seed and heritage of seed. So it's a very different system, and people rely on farming. Everybody relies on agriculture for their food. It's not like in the West, where your food is divorced from your daily life. So it's completely different. So now we're seeing this idea of, we're going to bring in food security, but you've got to shift your agricultural system completely. You've got to start buying annually. You must buy seeds, you must buy chemicals, fertilizers. You must start planting monocrops instead of planting your very diverse multi-crops that you use to feed the family, to feed your animals, you use for medicines. And then you've got to go take those monocrops and sell them in a market somewhere. And it's just a massive, massive risk that you're asking African farmers to take, to move away from the very diverse system that provides their food, and ask them to start gambling on selling on a market. So I don't know if I'm making sense there, but
totally.
I think that's one of the hugest problems, is that people don't understand the vast difference of the agricultural systems and how what's being proposed now is just really pulling the rug out from under farmers. And maybe the top 1% of farmers in Africa will be able to buy into this system. Maybe they can get some finance to buy this very expensive seed and related chemicals and take the risk of selling it on the market. But the vast majority of farmers are going to continue in the same systems.
And you have, the report mentioned, and we talked a bit about it, that South Africa, Egypt, Burkina Faso, and Sudan have allowed GM crops to be traded commercially you know, through these biosafety regulations. So has there been any impact so far that we can measure in terms of that in those four countries? And also, I do remember vaguely, and I'm wondering if you could tell us about this, that Zimbabwe had outright rejected the importation of GM crops and seeds. Is that right? Is it, what kind of, what's the resistance look like on the continent to GMOs?
Well, South Africa, I'm from South Africa. We have a very different agricultural system to the rest of the continent. Throughout apartheid, the land belonged to white farmers. We have a very sophisticated industrial agriculture system. And South Africa adopted GM crops 14, 15 years ago already. But South Africa grows GM maize, cotton, soya. Yeah, GMOs, cotton, and soya. And the result has been here of kind of making the rich richer and the poor poorer. So we have at the moment our maize seed sector is owned by two companies, Monsanto and DuPont, Pioneer. So a lot of concentration. The price of seed is very high. It's 2 to 5 times higher than conventional maize seed. Farmers have very little choice. And we have just a few small, like a small number of large-scale farmers growing maize. And that's the other thing I wanted to say to you is that maize is our staple food. It's very common in Africa. We eat maize just mulled and cooked into a porridge 3, 4, 5 times a day. We and our babies on maize. So it's a real food source here. It's not for agrofuels or for livestock like elsewhere in the world. So South Africa, we've had maybe 14 years experience growing GM maize, and a report came out last year by our Human Resources Council showing that 46% of South Africans are food insecure. Although we have good yields, as you said earlier, food security is not about yields. It's not about technology. It's about who has access to food. It's about poverty, unemployment, access to land. And those are all political issues that our government needs to deal with rather than just passing the buck over to Monsanto and say, oh, okay, we'll adopt GM crops and then everyone will be fine. We have to make some hard changes in our agrarian system in South Africa.
And so the second part of my question was, what does the resistance look like? And I don't know if I was accurate on Zimbabwe kind of rejecting GMOs straight up, but then also a forum on agroecology in Mali has just ended yesterday, which was a forum to think about how to work against these GMOs. So can you tell us maybe what the resistance looks like on the continent?
Zimbabwe has said that they won't cultivate GM crops, and that remains their stance. But they do import commodities from South Africa, so they do import GMOs from us. The last I heard, it needed to be milled before it came into the country so that people couldn't plant the whole kernels. And farmers still are resisting the introduction of GM crops there. Zambia is another one that's very, very strongly held out against GM. And about a decade ago, they had a massive famine and even refused GM food aid at that time, and instead worked on increasing the productivity of other staple crops like cassava and millet, sorghum. And they still remain quite strongly against it. It's a big debate still. It really is an ongoing resistance. But I think this program coming through USAID around the biosafety policy over the last decade has been very effective in training up a new set of African scientists who understand the technology from their point of view, they've become the new government advisors. Government advisors have been on a lot of training in the States, and we really see that there's been a shift in the leadership around around UN, that they're starting to feel that maybe they've been left behind and they should embrace this technology. But the resistance from farmer organizations remains very, very strong.
Haiti, we've reached the end of the time that we have today, but I'd really like to thank you for joining us and for telling us about this new report and about the issues around GMOs on the continent. And can you please let our listeners know where they might read your report and get more information?
I don't actually have the link on me. I'm so sorry.
FEIO.org. If you just go to the Friends of the Earth International website, it's on the front page there.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. And thank you so much for, taking the time and the effort and all the work that it takes to put out a report like this.
I really appreciate having the opportunity to chat with you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Have a good day, Haiti.
Go well.
Bye-bye. Bye. And that was Haiti Swambi, who has just written a report that was commissioned by Friends of the Earth International around the forcing of GMOs on unwilling African nations by U.S. agencies and NGOs such as the Gates Foundation. And if you would like to read that report, you can get it on the Friends of the Earth International website. That's FEIO.org, and it's right there on their homepage. Of course, you can check out our blog. We'll have all that information and the report up. That's AfricanPerspectives.tumblr.com.